proceed to the fifth case, Spatt versus the INS. Mr. O'Meara?
Good morning, Your Honor. John O'Meara representing the petitioner appellant, Mr. Butt. This particular panel has issued opinions that are very related to the case here. So I don't think a lot of background is necessary. But essentially, Mr. Butt petitioned for political asylum. It was denied. He appealed to the Board of Immigration Appeals, and they ruled against him. He filed a notice of, to reconsider, and the board refused to do that. And we then filed a mandamus asking the district court to order the board to do that. The defense
and
that
why
was
did
raised
you choose the mandamus route instead of simply taking an appeal from the board's refusal to reconsider, arguing, among other things, that the board's reliance on the timeliness of the petition to reconsider was erroneous?
Your Honor, I think if you look at 1252, that it has in mind that the Court of Appeals will hear this case when everything is decided on the merits. And I say that because if you look at 1252b6, it talks about hearing this court hearing a motion for reconsideration with an order of removal, i.e., that this court will review it after the Board of Immigration Appeals has heard everything and made its decision.
But it seems odd to me. I mean, other tribunals, whether they're administrative agencies or whether they're district courts, frequently wind up along the way having certain procedural orders that prevent somebody's case from getting developed further. And asking for a correction of a procedural mistake is a very common thing to do on appeal. So I don't mean quite to be asking you whether mandamus was wrong, but I don't know why an appeal couldn't have happened as an option. And then that does take us to the next question, because mandamus is an extraordinary writ. And so even putting to one side the INS's arguments about the various jurisdiction-stripping statutes, unless you can show that your ordinary remedies are inadequate, you wouldn't use mandamus.
Your Honor, as I read 1252, it doesn't give you the remedy of coming to the Court of Appeals with that simple issue before it, namely that the court was wrong in denying the petition to reconsider.
But you would be arguing, I'm sure, that the original decision that you now want reconsidered was also wrong, wouldn't you? I mean, you'd say we need some different result. If the original decision had been to grant him political asylum, you wouldn't be here.
Right.
I assume. So anyway, I'm just trying to get a sense of why it was that you thought that the board's final ruling, which was your petition to reconsider is untimely, we're not going to reconsider for that reason, didn't itself constitute an appealable order.
Well, it may in some respect. And if you look at the statute allowing appeals, it says that when a petitioner seeks review of an order under this section, any review sought of a motion to reopen or reconsider the order shall be consolidated with the review of the order. I read that with the rest of the section, which talks about a final order being the order of deportation or removal, and that only if you ask for both of them at once will you be allowed to proceed. And I also think that in the St. Cyr case, when they talk about the appeal being a method of resolving everything at once, that if you want to have everything resolved in the Court of Appeals at once, you have to have the Board of Immigration Appeals decision on the merits of the reconsideration motion.
Okay, maybe you could spend a minute on your timeliness point then, because it seems to me coming in on the on your view on the 31st day, if you take the day of mailing, That's late, unless it was a Sunday, unless the day before. I mean, you know how the county rules work, and if there's a 30-day period, or as is the case, you know, for appeals here, or if there's a 90-day period, you measure that period. That's when the appeal is due, unless it happens to be a holiday or a weekend, in which case you just move to the next available day. But that's a distinct rule from the 3-day mailing rule, and we don't apply that mailing rule for certain things. Why should the INS?
Well, one other distinction with this court's rules, if you look at what we receive at the time our appeal is filed, it states specifically, expressly, the date your brief is due will be the 30th day from, you know, whatever it is, and the mailing rule doesn't apply. So you are warned ahead of time.
For briefs, but not for your notice of appeal.
All right.
I mean, that's what this strikes me as somewhat analogous. I mean, it's not a perfect analogy, but all I mean is that there are some rules where the date's the date, and then there are other rules where the 3 days for mailing gets added on, and I don't see why this INS rule isn't of the first sort.
I'm thinking that it's, in a way, written like legal shorthand. It says that you have 30 days from a certain point in time to do this. But everyone, that doesn't tell you how it's computed. So the INS says, yes, it's ambiguous. We know that. And when we apply it, we go down to Rule 338, Regulation 338, and we put in the days off for holidays. And you have to look at it, as Judge Bauer said in the Handy Andy case, this is, you have to look at it in the real world situation. And somebody who is an immigrant trying to interpret this rule is not left with any tools to do that. If the court accepts the argument that the INS can go down to Rule 338 to find that 3-day exception, or whatever it turns out to be for weekends and holidays, there's no rational distinction for the immigrant not to go to 103.5 and say, yes, the mailing rule also applies. Once the question really on that point is not whether the INS's interpretation is reasonable, if any reasonable interpretation, once you have an ambiguity, is in favor of the immigrant. I'll save my time then for rebuttal. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Sandu?
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honor. Matthew Sandu on behalf of the respondents, appellees in this case. Your Honor, as the government's brief has set forth, we believe that the district court lacked jurisdiction in this case and that the appeal should be affirmed, that the district court's decision should be affirmed for lack of jurisdiction.
On that point, though, the Supreme Court has been rejecting this position of the service in a number of different contexts. You know, this particular wrinkle hasn't come up, but from the AADC case to St. Cyr to lots of others, they've read the jurisdiction stripping provisions very carefully, and it seems to me that there's a risk here of confusing the question whether an extraordinary writ like mandamus is warranted with the question whether the district court, whether this court has the power to address a clear failure on the part of the district court, the agency in this instance. And my example was, I was thinking, what if he had in fact filed this request for reconsideration on February 5th, well within the 30-day period, and somebody at the agency just misreads the date, or it gets lost and floats around, on the floor of the agency's mailroom for a while. And so the agency denies the petition on the ground that it was untimely. And it's a purely ministerial, I'm trying to make this purely ministerial, there's a very important distinction between telling an agency how to exercise its discretion and telling it that it has discretion that should be exercised. And it seems to me quite possible we may have the power to say, you were just wrong. You had some discretion here to decide whether to take this petition or not, exercise it. We're not, you know, if you decide you don't want it, that's fine. If you decide you do want it, that's fine. And if that can be done in this case, I don't know why there isn't at least jurisdiction to do it in his case, which we then would move on to some of the other things I was trying to explore, which is whether this is the proper candidate for mandamus. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And whether on the merits the district court judge was correct to say that the mailing rule doesn't apply. It was late anyway.
Well, I think, Your Honor, you had mentioned the question about whether mandamus jurisdiction would be appropriate. I think before we even get to those jurisdictional statutes, that what you're describing, I think there would be a problem with the requirement of showing that there's no other remedy that's available.
Right.
I agree with that. I think that it's clear that the petitioner in this case, and in the hypothetical that you're suggesting, the petitioner in that such hypothetical could seek relief directly with this court by filing a petition for review. In fact, the very statute that the petitioner argues supports this position, which is 8 U.S.C. 1252A, or I believe it's 1252B6, which is the consolidation provision, actually supports the government's position because it demonstrates that denials of motions to reconsider are, in fact, reviewable in this court. What that statute says is, if you appeal the original order, and then you if you file a petition for review of the original order, and then move to reconsider and file a petition for review of the motion to reconsider, those two petitions for review will be consolidated in the Court of Appeals. It supports the government's position that there is a remedy available for a denial of a motion to reconsider or a motion to reopen for untimeliness. In fact, we've cited cases in our brief that show that this court has, in its immigration jurisprudence, taken petitions for review on such issues. So I think the question would first be whether there's any other adequate remedy available, because like habeas corpus, mandamus is an extraordinary remedy. So I would think that in either the facts of this case or your hypothetical, the alien has an appropriate remedy that's available.
Now, didn't you concede in your brief that maybe this is all lawyers like to pay a lot of attention to procedural details, so I'm sure we're all having fun, but couldn't we just transfer this to ourselves now that it's here anyway and decide whether the district court was right or not on the timing issue?
Under 28 U.S.C. Section 1631, this would be somewhat of a peculiar transfer because it would be the Court of Appeals itself sort of sui sponte invoking the transfer authority for the district court. Usually it's the other way that the district court will transfer it up.
Well, but we do it all the time in habeas cases where
yeah.
There has to be an initial request here, and sometimes people get it wrong, and you know.
Yes, Your Honor, that would be a possibility, of course. In our footnote, we indicate that would be if the court finds it to be in the interest of justice to do that. So that would be the one requirement that the court would have to find. But I think the court didn't do exactly this type of remedy, but it did in the recent case that came out that we 28J'd to the court, the Gomez-Chavez case. It found a somewhat similar type of situation, and I think it would be helpful to issue that kind of ruling, as well as guidance for aliens that there is an appropriate remedy that's available in the Court of Appeals by petition for review. I know the government has been pressing this argument in many of its cases, and the same fear issue does not arise in this case because this is not habeas relief and because there's a clearly appropriate remedy that's involved. Your Honor, let me just say a couple of things about the merits. I think it's very clear from the reading of the regulation in 8 CFR Section 3.2B2 that 30-day requirement, there's no allowance for 3 days of mailing. I'd like to also point out there's a statute on motions to reconsider as well in the INA at 8 U.S.C. Section 1229A(c)(5), and that rule as well indicates that you get 30 days from the date of the deportation order. There's no allowance in there for mailing time. And as Your Honor has mentioned as well, in federal practice, this is done all the time. There's 3 days for mailing on certain pleadings. But the thing that comes to my mind, and I think this is true, is that in rehearing, a petition for rehearing, a decision of this court, I don't believe that there's 3 days of mailing notice. It seems to be somewhat similar or analogous to the motion to reconsider in administrative proceedings in this case. But as Your Honor pointed out, certainly with the notice of appeal, there's no 3-day notice. So what petitioner would be suggesting, if it were applied in federal practice too, is that the 3-day rule would have to be incorporated under his logical reasoning. The 3-day rule would have to be incorporated to all pleadings filed in the federal courts as well. Because as I understand his argument, he's saying that because the rule about the calendar days, if you fall on a weekend or a holiday, you go to the next business day, if that rule is incorporated into all filings, then so must the 3-day rule. Well, you could say the same thing as well in federal practice, and you would be essentially changing the rules and all of the, despite the plain language of the statute. I would also just go back to the broader issue of deference. I think that this is a case where the agency is charged with interpreting its own regulation, and here the question would be whether this is a reasonable interpretation. Judge Wood, you indicated a hypothetical where deference may not be warranted, where there's a clear violation of the regulation. But obviously here, I don't think anyone could say that it would be unreasonable for this board to read this particular rule as not providing 3 days of notice where there is no such provision in the rule. So if there are no more questions, Your Honor, I would ask that this court would affirm the district court's dismissal based on the lack of jurisdiction, or in the alternative, if the court sees that it is appropriate, it could transfer the complaint to itself, treat the complaint as a petition for review, and then deny the petition for review on the merits.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. O'Meara?
Your Honor, I think it's important to go back to what was decided in Adair, where Judge Auer said, read the caption on the sections. And the section 1252 is captioned review of judicial review of orders of removal. We didn't ask for a review of the order of removal as such. We're asking for the court to look at the question of whether this was filed in a timely manner, this petition, to reconsider. And it seems strange to cause this court to look at something twice, especially since all we're asking is that the district court look at the legal question of whether this was timely filed or not. We would, of course, accept this court's suggestion that the court could take this, transfer this case to it for decision. And on that basis, Your Honor, I think that the real issue is whether that section is ambiguous. It's not whether it could be interpreted to say just business days are important at the end of the period as opposed to calendar days. I think the question is what an immigrant might think looking at this. And in the real world, he's not sure, because it doesn't provide any computation method. If you look at Rule 6E in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, it says just exactly how it's to be computed. You take out the 10 days there, you would take out the holidays, you would take out the time of mailing. It actually specifies the holidays. If that rule was applied in this case, then you'd have a clear map for the immigrant to follow. I think they are the least able to decide what's good and proper in terms of making their petition. Therefore, we'd ask that either the court take this and consider it on the merits, or rule that the court did have jurisdiction and reverse that decision and find that the appeal was proper. Excuse me, the motion to reconsider was properly filed.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks, both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.